This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the point of galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. You can't get just one. Okay, so that's not like some marketing hyperbole. You literally can't get just one. They come in twos. So like, if you want just one, you're going to need to find a friend who loves slow-roasted chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch sauce. Or a friend of a friend, or have an awkward conversation with a complete stranger to see if they're obsessed with chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch. Or you could just like eat them both because you're obsessed with slow-roasted chicken, bacon. Okay, you get the idea. The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. At participating Taco Bell U.S. locations for limited time while supplies last.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe whitetail deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Teeter, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see, what's going on with me? I've been hunting about every single day of the week, and every morning, it wears on you. You know, it takes its toll. I've been hunting areas I've never hunted before, going in, seeing deer. I've seen a ton of bucks, an absolute ton of deer. It's been an awesome season for me. I've passed up, this is not a humble brag, but I've passed up a lot of deer this year, and I've enjoyed the process. I'm not upset about missing my target. I'm just having a great season, and I'm just embracing the opportunities that I've been given. And it's great. I'm appreciative of the things that I've learned and my ability to apply those in the field. And I think a lot of people, when they're out there hunting, they're chasing. My partner and I talked about this yesterday. And very experienced hunters. I mean, these guys have got much bigger deer on the wall than me and hunt amazing areas, travel all the country. We know all sorts of people to do this. I got clients to do this. And I'm amazed sometimes at the lack of sophistication. This is not a ding on those individuals, but it just goes to show you that there is a process that works. And if you're chasing deer, you're probably not going to be successful. And the reason I say that is getting ahead, and I'm talking about physically in the field, anticipating, predictive intelligence, having some real process to that, is the meaningfulness in finding the end result of success, either that's interacting with the deer or harvesting the deer. And so being ahead of the deer is key. It's putting the pieces together. It's about to get erratic. Deer behavior is going to change and is changing. And their behavior for seeking, for breeding, changes their movement cycle on the landscape, period. You need to be dialed now. This is where you need to be patient and dialed. So I just want to relay those points. I've just had such a great season. I have not killed a deer. I have not even shot a doe yet. But I'm just in a great mood because I've seen the fruits of my labor. And I've seen the opportunities for the future. And that means a lot to me. All right. I got Ty Jennings back. And Ty and I had, I think, a great conversation last time. I hope you all got something out of that. We're going to talk a little bit about rut tactics, monitoring deer and getting intel and making moves. So let's get Ty. Hey, Ty, what's up, man? How are you doing?
Good, John. I appreciate you having me back on.
All right. So we're going to fly today. I'm getting a little bit tired. I know you've been busy. So let's, you killed. And I want to quickly talk about your harvest, how that happened, the key attributes of it. And then I want to start digging into some of the details of what we can do going forward.
Yeah. So it was the 24th of October. We had that cold front. I think it was like 2 days, maybe 3 days of it. And it was the first day. So I was actually targeting a different deer, a deer that I've known since like 2019, 2020. And I was right in his core area, but another deer that I've been, you know, I probably have hours of footage of from the summertime through a spotting scope, and I've run into him a ton. He was super visible all summer. He came by me as a mature buck, so I couldn't pass it up on public land. I went back and forth, and I was going back and forth on that deer all summer. If he came by, what I would do, but I was not actively hunting him. It just, I was in a little bottleneck pinch point on a good transition where the bucks like to go, and he was there. So I took advantage of the opportunity, but it was, it was super fun. It was fun to execute. So there was some pretty cool access and pretty cool stuff with that.
Okay. Let's get in some of the specifics on that hunt. I want to know some of the details of, and again, sometimes deer just show up, right? That's the benefit of picking good areas. But yeah. In the area itself, what made this a usable area of interest for deer? And then how did you hunt the area to make it productive where your interception opportunity was higher? Why don't you drill down on that?
The reason I think that this was a great spot, first of all, I think these mature bucks, when they have that evidence shift in October, sometimes different bucks shift at different times. Sometimes it's late September. Sometimes it's, in October teens, somewhere in there. I think they're going to a core where they know over the years that first hot doe is going to come in. So the specific buck that I was chasing, he had shifted into there late September. It was about two and a half miles he shifted in there. And I think he just knew that there was going to be that first hot doe in that area. That's what he knew. And he set up shop there, and I'm assuming that this other mature buck, the one that I had the opportunity to kill, he probably knew that too, because, he slowly shifted. He just kept him closer and closer and eventually came through. But this specific area it's up against a waterway, and it's open open habitat. There's a bunch of points that stick out, you know, timber points, and it runs north and south, this long transition. So, that day we had like a north wind, but the wind just does whatever it wants because there are several different waterways going different directions right there. So the wind kind of just rips down these waterways in every which way and kind of accumulates it at a certain point. But my plan was to come in and take a canoe down the river and just come into this one particular spot where I thought I could enter this deer. And it was supposed to be perpendicular access. It was going to be less than 20 yards as soon as I stepped off the canoe. But this particular river channel is so low that I couldn't get down it, and I got stuck. So I had to fight my way out of it, and eventually got to a spot where I could get to the land, and then I just had to take my access from the north about a quarter mile south, and I just stayed as tight to the bank as I could. And I didn't really want to do that because that's how the bucks are traveling, but I felt like if I could stay close enough to the river, then I'd be okay. So
was it windy?
It was. It was windy, and it was like a real, real like sketchy. Every once in a while it would come down this one channel and it would kind of flow inland a little bit, and I just did not like that. But for most of the evening, I was good, and that's the reason I had to stay. Eventually, once I got to my spot, you know, I was probably on average 50 yards from their main trail, and I just paralleled their main trail until I got to a point where that main trail and my trail that I took in for access kind of met, and I was just not happy with that because obviously I didn't want them to get my ground scent. But experience in the past, a lot of times these mature bucks, just my personal experience, if you get in early enough, sometimes they'll just backtrack you and they're okay with your ground scent. You know, obviously if they catch your wind, that's a different story, but I wasn't anticipating them being able to get to me because I went through that such a tight bottleneck. It was probably 5-10 yards wide. And then it was probably another 30-40 yards until I got to my setup. But, yeah, the wind was coming straight down the river. So it was okay. Eventually these deer just came from the north. I expected my target to come from the south, and these deer came from the north. There was 2 3-year-olds that came in first, and then he came trotting in late. So he got to a point where, you know, I knew exactly who he was, and I threw out 2 soft grunts, and he walked within 18 yards, and I just kind of let him have it. But he was just following a transition line, and, you know, I'm sure he was out searching for does or doing a scrape loop, but kind of how it went down.
Yeah, you passed up some deer, and you're patient. So, I mean, if you shot one of the deer, you know, the 3-year-olds that transitioned through, I don't know. You know, you wouldn't have ended up with that deer. Now,
right.
Talking a little bit about their movement and movement cycles in there this time of year, specifically, we're at the end of October, transitioning to early November.
Yeah.
Defining how to attack a deer in a situation where, you know, you've got terrain features that you're working with or habitat conditions. What are you looking for in the landscape right now? If you were to start over, you didn't have this deer under your belt. Let's just say you're scouting, because you can put yourself in that situation. What are the factors or indicators in your approach that will create opportunity? Again, this is your landscape setting specifically, mm-hmm. So it may not apply to everybody, but what are things you're looking for to be successful in the rut? We're getting off very consistent patterns of movement. And when I say very consistent, much more consistent than you will start to see now. But I heard people argue this recently. I've heard people say that, you know, their movement routines are still consistent during the breeding phase. And actually, I don't disagree with them. And the reason I say that is the core areas can expand, but a lot of times, like you mentioned earlier, they're on scouting missions and they appreciate doe interest in areas, and those does that they've been anticipating coming into estrus are in resident areas that change But they don't necessarily change all that drastically until a high level of pressure where there's a mass amount of breeding cycle starts to occur, if that makes sense. A dose core range changes. Does it change in concert of the pressure that's around them, meaning the breeding activity that's around them or hunting pressure? Sure, absolutely. But I want you to kind of dial in, okay, let's try to find a deer. Let's go through the steps. What processes can people go through now, even step by step? And what are the things you see? How do you read the landscape right now? And what are the other factors that will impact your ability to be successful? A lot of questions there.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm pretty much still on the hunt. You know, I don't have a tag that's good until November 16th. But I'm still trying to keep track of this target buck. And it's a little bit different if you're just on the hunt for a mature buck or, you know, a 3-year-old or whatever. But if you're hunting a particular deer like myself, you know, I'm just still trying to monitor his core area. And I pretty much have this deer's core area dialed in. And what I'm seeing is it's almost like a hub and spoke on a wheel. They come back to their particular hub, their core area this time of year, and they feel safe and they know where these doe groups are and they know when they're going to come in. But I see them come back for a couple days and they kind of make a loop to all their different scrapes, which are probably in association with all the different doe groups. And then they might be gone for a couple days. Maybe they're locked down with a doe. And then I see them come back. So really, if that's my process, is I'm just going to continue to hunt this deer in his particular area. And if you don't have a deer on your radar and you're looking, I mean, to me, the biggest things that I look for are when multiple things come together. And what I mean by that is like different types of habitat, different terrain features, elevations, things like that, all different kinds of edges, all different kinds of signs. So that's where I would start. And, you know, I would hunt it or I would scout it. In-season scouting is precious this time of year. And that's just what I see. I see these deer kind of come back to their core and then they go out on these different spokes and they check scrapes and they pick up a doe when they can, and they might be locked down for a few days, but I think you can intercept them if you learn the landscape and you learn the deer to a certain point.
What if I said to you, Ty, and I say this to my clients, for those that actually are building and managing habitat, their properties specifically, I said, stop paying attention to sign. Hunt mm-hmm. the movement. Hunt the landscape. Hunt the movement. Is that a higher priority to you than the sign specifically? Now, let's say you have intel on deer, because sometimes intel, this is a weighing point. When you don't have any intel, meaning you don't know caliber deer, size of deer, age of deer, any of that stuff, right? You know there's deer in the area. You want to see if there's buck activity specifically. Sign may be meaningful. Let's assume you put the pieces together and you already have that intel, but you're trying to make a decision of where to go. And that's a big topic. I mean, I contemplate that all the time. Is this a productive spot with high probability of intercept or not, right? That's my, you know, I told you that other day when you and I chat on the phone, I said, I'm going to kill tonight. I got 60% chance of killing. Well, I didn't make that happen clearly, but, but the intercept was there, right? So I had all these stacking factors that I was telling you roughly about that made that play happen. But, and that's just, those are things that I see and I can read the landscapes. I think people have a hard time doing that. And it's not just stem count. I think there's land features that come together that make certain areas more productive than others. And so you're talking about movement cycles and loops. And I think that's very normal. And, you know, and my partner hunts loop cycles with his particular property. And he's been within hours of when he thought a deer would be in an area. And that shows that a movement cycle is somewhat predictive. But let's talk about picking the spot. How do you pick the spot? I struggle with this, so I'm interested to hear how you pick the spot. I mean, you've already been successful, so you know how to pick the spot. Educate.
Yeah, it's very specific to how I hunt. And there's obviously, you know, and a lot of people know there's no one way to be successful in this sport. But I am just get as close as I can to where I think they're living and where they're bedding. And that's just it. I mean, I don't see until maybe late in the first week, second week of November, these mature bucks really stretching out into their full home range. So like I said, I'm as close to their core, as close to their bed as possible. And, you know, that's just it. I mean, I we talked about funnels last time. I mean, I did technically hunt and kill on a funnel, but I was as close as I thought I could get to that deer's bed on a funnel that would potentially lead him to me. So, I mean, I can't hunt that close to food. This is high pressure public land. Otherwise, you know, like most people say, downwind side of a food source or a field edge, where the does are, these bucks might be cruising through there, but I don't have a lot of success doing that. So I find bedding, and by finding, you know, in order to find bedding, I'm looking for different habitat types and where multiple things come together, soft edges, up against hard edges. And I just get as close as I can, as close to that deer, because they just don't move a whole lot in daylight. I mean, the closer we get to November, I mean, we're as close as we're going to get now, the more they're going to move, especially with the changes in the weather and stuff like that. But I just get as close to bedding as I can and set up as slow and as quiet and as stealthy as I can. And that's just how I've always done it. I mean, I struggle in areas where there's not a lot of edges. I'll tell you that, where there's, you know, this is technically big woods, you mean anchor piece, but I struggle when there's monotony, when there's not a lot of edges, not a lot of terrain features, points. And, you know, I can't really hunt saddles because those are kind of overpressured. A lot of guys gravitate to those, but I'm just looking for where these beds are, or these bucks are bedded, really.
It doesn't sound like your strategy changes much from the beginning of the season till now at this point, does it?
No, it doesn't. Not a whole lot. Like I said, I see these deer, and I don't know if this is just a part of the areas I hunt in the region I hunt, but these mature bucks, they kind of just stay in this specific core area. And like I said, I think they, when they make that shift in late summer, early fall, it's because they know that that's their breeding system. That's their breeding strategy and their survival strategy. They can kill two birds with one stone. And so I don't see like bucks get into an area and then go and live in an area where there's other does and, you know, shift another 2 miles. I mean, very rarely do I see them extend that far. I mean, like I said, very rarely. They just kind of, they have a hub, they're there, and at night, and I'm sure a few times during the day, they just spoke out and look for does and heat, and they hook up with them for a couple of days, and then they're right back doing the same thing.
Yeah. I've worked in a lot of farm country, and I can tell you for certain, unmanaged landscape, the vast expansion of home ranges extends tremendously. In some of these areas where you're talking, and I don't know your specific habitat types, how they're being developed or managed, what the disturbance regime is, natural or otherwise. In areas that I have worked on, I've been able to change the activity so it's concentrated on certain properties. So their expansion, mm-hmm. meaning their volume of movement amongst the home range, is now shrunk. And again, there's going to be studies that come out. And again, it's region specific. Deer individual are so individualistic in this, but you're going to see my business has been able to make those changes. It's interesting. And that's, I'm sorry, that's not a brag by any means. I'm just trying to say what we've accomplished.
Yeah.
What I think is really cool, and I, you know, everyone's different. These are things that I pull away. What I think is cool is when you're starting to look at individual features on the landscape, like for example, today I did some in-season scouting and I went through this spot and I said, this is going to be a low pressure spot. I've only got a few hours this morning. My kids got stuff going on this afternoon. I'm just going to hunt for a little bit, do an observation set. I said, so nice 2.5-year-old eight pointer. And, you know, I'm sitting in the spot. And I said, this is not the spot. The minute I set up in there, I could see it wasn't the spot. It just, one of the major issues was it was cut perfect. This is on a property hunt with, there's seven individuals that hunt this property with me. And that's been hunted quite a bit recently. It's about a hundred acres. And you know, it's funny. I was doing averages the other day. I was like trying to find the average, you know, hunter density per square mile. It's like 22 people. It's like 22 or 24 people per square mile, roughly. Wow. And, anyhow, so I was going back to this and I was like, oh yeah, but you know, averaging like in my property, you know, one person per 20 acres. I'm just thinking of the volume of pressure and the frequency hunting and all those things. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to pick odd times. I'm going to hunt very unique on this property. I'm just going to pick and choose. The volume of density, the cover was absolutely like, it was perfect. It was cut perfect. This is exactly how I would cut a property. It was high graded in some areas, so I wouldn't cut it exactly this way, but they're components of it. And it wasn't a checkerboard style. It was, I typically cut like an artistic flow where there's layer cuts in this particular area, not by design. Like this was not managed for anything. It just happened to lay that setup, but adjacent to it is a major open area with a bunch of activity. And mm-hmm. So the closeness of that open area with some activity, there's none today specifically, distracts deer from moving through this travel corridor. They will not move through it in a normal sequence of time because there's too much activity around that area. They want the seclusion factor. So my story is simply, I knew that I wasn't in the right spot the moment I set up this morning, but I still enjoyed it. I still saw a deer. It was still cool. But from there, I started to assess, okay, what can I see landscape features that drive me to a different area? I like the high elevation. It was windy. I wanted to be high on a windy day. They like to be high. It was warm. So they're going to shift this afternoon to be kind of one of those likely cooler areas where they can be a little more thermal neutral. And, I'm talking the does specifically, the bucks are just seeking, but again, you're hunting the does in these applications. So you kind of need to understand where the deer are going to be specifically, but that young understory forest, anywhere between 5 to 12 years in our particular area, just the successional periods, that is ideal right now. If you could find those areas where there's young pioneer forest in that age class, that's where you're going to be successful. Pockets open and closed in that situation with travel corridors in the mix and being able to intercept without too much intrusion. And then again, they're going to cut your tracks if you get in those areas. And again, how do you manage that? We have a boot process with my clients, but beyond that is you're going to have to kind of bear the risk. I mean, it is risk. And so, you know, it's a one and done kind of deal, but you're going for the glory. So I just want to kind of relay my hunt this morning, which wasn't that productive, but I knew at the moment I was in there, it was wrong. And that was okay. I wanted to sit and relax and enjoy it. So I never sat in this spot before. I'm just going to sit and observe and take it on in. And I should have probably sat longer, but I just didn't have the patience this morning.
I had a hunt very, very similar to that. Before I killed my buck, I knew I wasn't really in the right spot. I was in the timber. I was in a bowl, but I just wanted to relax. I just wanted to enjoy a morning. I haven't hunted a morning in almost 2 years, so I knew I was going to get down and scout. But I couldn't have said it better. The open and I don't know how you said it exactly, open and closed type cover areas. That's exactly what I'm hunting and what I'm looking for. I'm looking for relatively open areas with a lot of different pockets of cover. And most of the time I see those are tucked in corners of properties and the lowlands and up against waterways and stuff like that. And it's just harder for people to get to. It doesn't look like a pleasing place to hunt deer. A lot of people want to hunt in the open timber, the hardwoods, but I stay right away from those areas. And I think the deer do too. I mean, I see it. I witness it. That's my experience. So that's exactly what I look for.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of my areas are beech maple forests. And so I know how to manipulate those for deer interest. Mm-hmm. So when I go to these properties, they're easy to pick out. That doesn't mean they're easy to access. And that's 90% of the problem is how do you get in there quietly? I'm still amazed at how you're able to get in there. And again, I don't think I'm in stealth mode. When I was a kid, I just some random thought. When I was a kid, I had this dream. So I was like, I think I was like probably 19, you know, so it's been quite a few years ago. But mm-hmm. I wanted to build these deerskin, you know, like, you know, boots or shoesies or whatever yeah. you want to call them. So I could sneak in ninja style and like, you know, get up in a tree. I had a lone wolf climbing tree stand. I thought it was really cool. And I just had that dream, right? I could sneak in there. Now I find myself as older and just being a little more clunky, not as like, you know, just not as smooth in the woods. And it's funny because I'm so much smarter than I was before, but I just mm-hmm. don't feel as nimble and capable at times. And I usually feel stealth mode. And now I feel like a big gorilla going in. And, you know, it's not like I'm not a giant guy. I'm 6'1", you know, probably 230. I guess I'm not small, but I'm not necessarily a giant. And, I just don't feel stealthy. I want to kind of talk a little bit about that. And, you know, I think one of the things is getting in quiet. We talked a little bit about that before, and you said, you know, hey, moleskin, everything. And I just picture you just with just complete tape driven all over your bow, all over everything. But being quiet and being small and being nimble, I think is a big piece of this to your success. And have you had any thought and reflection on that? And it's time too. You take your time. And I want you to dialogue a little bit about that, because I think it's an important topic.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, there's so many important things when it comes to, you know, these encounters and having success. It's almost like the planets have to align, but, yeah, I do. I just take my time, and most of my body just wants to rush. You know, I just want to, and this is how I know a lot of people feel the same way. I got to get to my tree. I got to climb my tree, and then I'm hunting. I mean, it could be over before it even started if you have that mindset, and it's hard to get out of that mindset. I mean, I had that for a long time. And when I started being creative and using unique access, being as stealthy as I could, I started running into deer constantly, bucks constantly, you know, to the point where I'm killing them before I even get to my tree. So I look at a spot, and a lot of people will look at it and say, well, that's only good on a northwest wind, or I can hunt that on a south wind. And I try to look at a spot and I say, how can I hunt that spot and access that spot on every single wind? Because that's just the way it has to be. Because if this mature buck that I'm after is living in there, I mean, he's living in there no matter what the wind is in a lot of scenarios, because of just the terrain and the habitat. So I'll look and see what I can do. If I can take a waterway, if I can take a different road, if I can come through the backside. I mean, you got to be comfortable going through water. You got to be comfortable going through reeds and cattails and canary grass and crunchy maple leaves. So depending on the conditions, if I have wet, rainy, windy conditions, I just know it's going to happen, because I can just get as close as I want, as quiet as I want. But if it's crunchy, if it's hot, if it's loud, it's like I really, really have to spend my time going in slow and leaving the house early and getting there. And if, like I said, if I can take a waterway and get the bulk of the access done that way, I'll do it. But it's just a mindset. As soon as you step out of the truck, now you're hunting. You never know when you can run into your target or a mature buck or a doe, whatever you're after. So I take my time. I don't try to break anything. I try to slip my legs through high stem count areas. I don't want my stand or my bow hitting anything. I like, for example, the hunt that I killed on the 24th. I mean, I was just going so slow. It was a little gusty that day, that first day of the front. And I would stand there for 10 minutes. If it wasn't windy and I didn't have noise cover, I was not going to move. I waited for the wind to gust, and then I would move, and I could, you know, you could feel, you have instinct, you know, how fast you can move, how, if you have to be low or whatever you got to do. But it's just being stealthy, just moving slow, picking where you're going to put your foot, and not just stomping down, feel what's underneath your foot. Try not to be clunky. I mean, I'm getting clunkier as I get older too, so it's kind of annoying. And I try to actually work out, have a workout regimen all summer just so I can be more nimble, because there's been so many times where I've run into deer and I'm about to take a step and they swing and they're looking, and now I'm on 1 foot for about what feels like 10 minutes, but it's probably 60 seconds. So it's just all about access. Like, if I want to hunt the spot, how can I get there no matter what the wind is? And how can I just, if I think he's here, make an educated guess, how can I just have that wind in my favor a little bit? It doesn't have to be perfect. It's just got to be not blowing to him.
You know, the dangerous piece about this is, and you brought something up, like the low pressure days, high pressure days, high barometric pressure days, you can get away with bloody murder. If it was a rain came through and the next day is a high pressure day, a lot of people like to hunt pre-fronts. And this time of year, I'm not so keen on that. Although you killed on before a front coming through, I like post. Usually I find those a little more productive, particularly if there's some wetness, significant amount of wetness, and it kind of resides in that area. Again, it helps more of the stealth mode. Always inquisitive on this point. And my partner and I do the same thing. And him and I go back and forth, man. I tell you, it's so nice having buddies that you can really start to dialogue about deeply about this, right? And so, you know, we're just picking our days, right? We'll go through the week and say, okay, this morning's good. Why don't you hunt this afternoon? We're going to go in this spot. We strategize together and we critique each other's. And that's how we've, you know, beyond our business, we've got to be kind of like hunting buddies. Although he's not allowed to hunt my property. That's a whole other issue. But, you know, he likes to pick low pressure days with light rain. And he's totally turned me on to those days big time. The volume of movement on the landscape. And it's ridiculous. And I don't want to critique anybody, but there's been information that's come out recently has been, hey, you can't, these are not the days. Weather is not as big of a factor now. Oh, wait, hang on for a second. Weather is a factor, right? The studies that come out, learn it yourself. And I'm going to tell you, weather is an absolute factor. And there's nuances to weather that are pertinent to specific deer in locations based on habitat type and preferences that are going to pull deer into areas, move them out of areas. And I've leveraged that for years. There's the science piece of it they're trying to figure out, but then there's reality, like where you and I live. And everyone on this podcast lives in reality. And in reality, we get to see these things transpire. I didn't need somebody to study it for me. I can tell you what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So those days in particular are probably my most preferential days, not heavy rain, light rain. And it works to a deer's advantage, but you just said you're hunting off wind. So you could hunt technically a wind, maybe not high gusts or gust and lulls, but you're looking at the cadence of the wind in those scenarios just as much as the wind direction and how wind is going to stay in an area. And again, the molecules, at least the water molecules, your scent's going to reside there for a longer period of time. So wind is even more critical in those conditions. Mm-hmm. So it's understanding how deer are going to use the landscape. Do you agree with that or have any comments on that?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with it. I mean, what's right or wrong scientifically, but you always hear people are like, oh, you know, the rain will wash your scent away. But I've heard, you know, dog trackers say forever, you know, moisture is just great for scent. Like you said, it holds in those water molecules. So I don't know if that's why deer tend to move when there's a lot of moisture or if it's a pressure thing or what. All I know is I like weather and I like light rain and I like wind, you know, consistent wind. Yeah. I don't like any kind of stagnant weather. So I definitely look for those days if I had to pick. I had a guy who listened to a podcast last time. He asked me, hey, I can only take one day off the first or second day of this front. What do you suggest? And I'm like, oh, man, put me on the spot. I don't know. I like the first day, but it seems like, and we talked about this, it seems like from what I'm seeing, the second day is a little better for whatever reason. I don't know what it is, but
I wish it could be really context specific and go through like my weekly strategy. Cause we sit down, it's like a meeting with my partner and I go through the week. Mm-hmm. We call each other usually every Monday and Wednesday. We're working on some client stuff. We're getting our client schedule set up for the season we're cutting. And so we're talking this morning and he had to check trap lines today. And he could have been on his target this morning. So, you know, I was messing with him because we were strategizing last night what to do. And, you know, I told him I'm going to just go goof around in the woods tomorrow. I'm going to go hunt some new spots I've never been to. And, you know, it would be so nice to contextually kind of go through my week and just describe, okay, I'm going to hunt here. Here's the stacking factors. this is what I think, you know, in this particular area, these are the locations they're going to be at. This is why, this is the intel, breaking my whole hunt down. You do that probably a lot in your head. I know I do. And then I question myself. And so I'm going to this point of, it can be really frustrating coming up because you're making a decision and you like to, you're not patient. You're patient getting to the stand, but when it comes to the, should I be here or not, you might make a move real quick. And I want to know from your standpoint, when you're going to go after a deer and you don't feel it's right, right? Gutturally it hits you and you want to make a change. What are the steps or what are the things you do to contemplate, I'm in the right spot, either to keep the confidence in the spot you're at or make a change? Because I think a lot of people, they're going to go to their locations, they're going to see the environment, they're going to say, well, I must either kick the deer out, they're not coming through, they have maybe no intel, but they're sitting there with this decision making to leave or stay. They also don't stay in the woods long enough. And that's another factor in this whole equation. So I want you to just talk about the things that make you successful now through the seeking phase that would be helpful for folks.
Yeah. Not staying long enough. That's a big one. You hear this from people all the time, that 10 to 2 time frame during the rut is like, is some of the best. And I don't know the reason. I have theories, but you know, I don't know if it's because deer feel that there's less pressure in the woods as far as hunters go, or, and then that's their best time to move, or if they're just waiting for doe groups to bed down and then they're going to go check them. I'm not sure what it is, but it seems like that, that 10 to 2 time frame is really, really good. But, as far as like my strategy, coming up, it's, yeah, I mean, you could sit rut funnels. You could just keep hunting a single deer like I am, but you just want to be in these locations where you feel like you have a chance with the terrain, with the habitat, with the doe groups. You can't just go sit in the woods somewhere. I mean, you could get lucky, but you got to have a reason to be there. And like most people, I used to be guilty of it all the time. I would just go sit in the woods and I'd be like, oh, I didn't have a chance today. Or I want to feel like every time I'm out there, and I have been as the years go on, every time I'm out there, I feel like I'm going to kill the one I'm after. It's okay. Just, yeah, it's one of those things.
Okay. Let's bump over to this. Okay. Let's say you're in the stand. I'm gonna give you a scenario. This is the last thing we're going to talk about. You're in the stand and you see activity, and the activity is some distance away. And so you are confident in your spot. Maybe you have intel there. It seems to make sense, but you see information, right? The information is in front of you that something's going on. Do you chase? I started off saying this today, chasing deer. Yeah. Do you chase during the rut?
Personally, experience tells me to move, and what the right time is, that's, you got to feel that. I can't tell you what the right time is, but if you see some activity and then it stops, and then you see more activity and it's all, you know, 90 yards away, 80 yards away, 60 yards away. Yeah, that's, I'm going to move. I'm going to get down and I'm going to go towards that activity. And that's a lot of times how I get it done. I hang my stand super low if I'm even in a stand, and I'll just climb right down, grab my bow, and I'll go towards it. And that's just, I'm a little bit impatient. I'm patient when it calls for it, but when it calls for me to get down, I am not afraid to get down and sneak. I can't imagine not doing that at this point. I've just had too many good experiences doing that. And you're either this time of year, in my experience, you're either in it or you're way out of it. So you might as well, if you see something, you might as well go get mixed up in it.
Yeah. And one of the points I was going to make out of this is, when I say chasing, I really mean specifically there's intel. Let's say you have a cellular camera, it goes off, you have intel, and then you move towards that intel, not knowing, you know, what's actually going on. And you sit off that intel and you basically sink ship in it. And that's your focus point, and it distracts you. And whereas you're talking about physically seeing something, chasing after it, and making decisions right there on the spot, totally different scenario, but it's something to think about. And I think there's a difference, big difference.
Yeah, I would right now, all but throw the camera's data right out the window. Personally, it's, if you're chasing cameras, you're you're just late. You just are. That's, I'll be blunt about it. You're chasing. You're not ahead of it. So I would all but throw the camera data out. I mean, yeah, you can be sitting there on the couch at 10 o'clock and see a buck walk in front of your camera in daylight and with a doe, and you can make a play off of it maybe, but if you know your property. But yeah, I would not be using cameras to determine whether you should be in the woods in a certain location or not. That's just, you're going to be chasing your tail, love in my opinion.
Yeah, I love that, Ty. I think the camera data is for a point in place, and it could be leveraged for other reasons, but maybe not right now. All right, let's end this. Anything you want to leave the listenership with? I've enjoyed you being on. I've got a proposition for you after this podcast, so we'll chat. But anything you want to leave listeners with?
Yeah, I mean, I would try and be as hyper confident in your hunting locations as you can. I mean, don't be afraid to hunt on your feet. I mean, unless you're really dialed into a spot and a deer or a funnel and all day sit, I wouldn't be afraid to get on your feet this time of year. And you'll be surprised if you're stealthy enough, how many deer you can run into, especially, bucks that are locked down with does. If that doe doesn't see you, and that buck is not going to leave. So don't be afraid to get on your feet, scout, run into deer, and set up that way.
Yeah, and I'll leave you one thing as well. Invest your time. You're there to hunt. Be serious about what you're doing. Engage deeply with the landscape and assess everything around you to a degree of way higher sophistication. Pay attention to every aspect of anything that's going around you and take mental note of it. Be open-minded. I work with a lot of clients. You got to change their mindset. Have a mindset of open and be attentive to what's going on around you and just strategize based on that. Try not to get caught up in your biases. Try to be open to suggestion and information. All right. Ty, thanks for the time today. I appreciate chatting with you. Great information, man. Down to earth. Good guy. You got a lot to share, and appreciate all your insight. And congratulations on that nice buck, man. That was a beauty. I'm really happy for you. So
thanks, John. I appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words.
All right. We'll talk again soon. See you, man. Bye.
See ya.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.